You know that there's, of course, a mitzvah called matzis shekel, giving half shekel. But people don't realize there are actually three separate mitzvahs that are connected to the matzis shekel, and they really have nothing to do with each other. One mitzvah, which is the one that most people know about, is there was an annual mitzvah in the time of the Beis HaMikdash that every person, actually not every person, every man from the age of 20, if you were less than 20 or a woman, you were not obligated, had to give a half shekel that was used for the purchase of the korbanos of the Beis HaMikdash. The korbanos of the Beis HaMikdash, I don't mean the individual korbanos, I mean the communal offerings, the offerings that were brought on behalf of Am Yisrael, the korban tamid, the korban musaf, the ketores, had to be brought with public money. You know, in a lot of yeshivas, although I don't see it here, you often have a sign that says, today's learning is dedicated by so-and-so. In the Beis HaMikdash, if some guy would show up and say, I'm going to dedicate today's service, it would not be accepted. The halacha is it has to come from publicly collected money, and this publicly collected money was a tax that was a machzis shekel. Now, another peculiarity of this is that the Beis HaMikdash had a defined fiscal year, and the fiscal year of the Beis HaMikdash was from Nisan. That means that from the time Rosh Chodesh Nisan comes, even if there was leftover money from last year's shkolin collection, that leftover money could not be used for the purchase of korbanos. It could not be used. It's very similar to, there are a lot of government rules about appropriations, that money that was not spent from the last year cannot be carried over without a new appropriation. That's why government agencies, if they have any leftover money, they spend it before the end of the fiscal year, because otherwise they will not be able to carry it over. So what do you do with extra money? Let's say animals were cheap that year. So we're left with more shkolim than we needed to spend. So the Mishnah gives you rules. The Mishnah and shkolim actually gives you rules. You can use it to fix potholes, to fix your shalayma, etc. What if you had a shortfall? Then we would make a second tax. So given the fact that starting from Nisan, all korbanos have to be purchased from newly collected money, then the Beis HaMikdash had to be sure that when Rosh Chodesh Nisan started, there would be some money there that was newly collected. And that is why the Mishnah tells us on Rosh Chodesh Adar, they 1 month before, they would start announcing for the collection of the half shekel. Meaning not everybody paid by Nisan, just like everyone else. Money came in dribs and drabs. But at least if you started collecting a month before, there would be enough to buy the korbanos until the new money came in. Now, initially, they just announced it, meaning you gave voluntarily. But later on in the year, if you didn't give voluntarily, this was an enforceable tax. They would take property, they would force you to give it, and the like. So this is the mitzvah of machzis shekel, and indeed, this is why before Purim, even today, we do something which is not d'oraisa, it's not even d'rabbanan, it's really just an old minhag. Zechar l'mikdash, to commemorate the Beis HaMikdash, we too give the equivalent of half a shekel before Megillah reading. Now there is a machlokas exactly, what does it mean half a shekel? It's a little confusing because in Israel there actually is a coin called half a shekel. Most poskim say that the rule is you simply give half of whatever your denomination would be. So in the United States, you would give, you don't have to have a coin half dollar, you'd have to give 50 cents. In Israel, it happens to be, you give a half shekel. But keep in mind that the Israeli half shekel is not at all the same value as the biblical half shekel. The biblical half shekel, based on its weight in silver, is approximately $8 of silver. $8. So that would mean, in terms of shkolim, $8, you'd have to give whatever it is, 30 to 32 shkolim. Okay, so it's very different. On the other hand, since our giving of the half shekel is only a zeicher l'mikdash, it's only a commemoration, most opinions say it doesn't have to be that way, then you can give the half Israeli shekel, that would be good, or a half dollar, or a half lira, whatever, or a half pound, whatever the denomination is. Okay, now that is one mitzvah of matzis shekel. the annual mitzvah of Matzah Sashekel that goes to what you might call the operating budgets of the Beis HaMikdash. But there was another half shekel offering that was very different. And this was a one-time half shekel offering that was collected when the Mishkan was constructed. That is, right, Moshe Rabbeinu comes down. We had the Chedo Egel, and Hashem wanted to destroy the Jewish people. And Moshe Rabbeinu said, if you're not going to keep the Jewish people, I want to be erased as well. And in fact, we say that Moshe Rabbeinu, Hashem listened to Moshe Rabbeinu. That is why Moshe Rabbeinu's name did not appear in Parshas Tetzaveh 2 weeks ago. But eventually, HaKadosh Baruch Hu forgives Am Yisrael, and Moshe Rabbeinu comes down on Yom Kippur with the two luchos, and that is the forgiveness of the chet o ego. There is a bit of a chicken and an egg problem here. Did Hashem forgive us because it was Yom Kippur? Or did the day become Yom Kippur because that was the day that the chet o ego was forgiven? Meaning, which came first? Was it the forgiveness of the sin that made that day Yom Kippur? Or because that day was vested with the powers of atonement, that is why we were forgiven. But be it as it may, we were forgiven. And immediately the day after Yom Kippur, on the 11th of Tishrei, Moshe Rabbeinu gathered everybody, that's this week's parsha, and he told them about the Mishkan, and they contributed to the Mishkan. Now, the Mishkan needed many, many things. The Mishkan needed gold and silver and copper and wool, Chelas wool, and Argaman, which is scarlet wool, and Tolas Shani, which is red linen that is dyed. And people were not told what to give or how much to give. You gave as much as you wanted to give. There's a great emphasis in the building of the Mishkan on voluntarism. Each person gave what they wanted to give. But there was one exception. There was one mandatory contribution, not for the korbanos, that's every year, but a one-time contribution in the construction of the Mishkan that people had to give. And that was, they had to give a half shekel, and that half shekel was melted down, and it was used for the adonim of the Mishkan. Adonim means, is translated as sockets of the Mishkan. What do we mean by sockets? So again, it could be, Archibald Chumash even has a picture. Basically, the Mishkan was constructed of very heavy boards, and the boards were carved, so they had at their base, at their bottom, two teeth, like the prongs of a plug. And there were sockets. The sockets were silver sockets from the half shekel. They resembled, they would look like concrete blocks. Imagine concrete blocks. And each board was supported at its foundation by two of these blocks. So each prong was inserted in a block, and that would hold it into place. And when the Mishkan was disassembled, the boards would be pulled from the sockets, and the boards would be put on wagons together with the sockets and be transported from place to place. Remember, the Aron HaKodesh and the Mizbeach was carried on the shoulders of the Levian. But the boards and the Adonim were transported by wagons. Actually, similar to the Conestoga wagons of the old Wild West, they were covered wagons in that way. Now, the Adonim were of silver. There were two Adonim for every board, and they were made from the Machzis HaShekel. Now, it's very, very interesting. Before Rosh Chodesh, you know, the first Shabbos, or the Shabbos before Rosh Chodesh Adar, or if Rosh Chodesh Adar is on Shabbos, in order to commemorate the fact that that's when we began collecting Shkala, when there was a Beis HaMikdash, we read that first part of Kisisa about giving the Shkala. But what's very strange is that what those psukim are talking about are not what Parsha Shkala is commemorating. Parsha Shkala is commemorating the annual Machzis HaShekel. Kisisa is not talking about the annual Machzis HaShekel. Kisisa is talking about the one-time Machzis HaShekel that was given for the Adonim. So why am I reading that? I should read the part of the Torah that talks about the annual donation. of Matzah Sashekel? The answer is, there is nothing in the Torah that talks about the annual mitzvah of Matzah Sashekel. We only know it from a drasha. In other words, if I want to read something that is at least a commemoration, this is the best I can do. I can't find anything better, because in point of fact, the annual mitzvah of Matzah Sashekel is not explicit in the Torah. In other words, if I were to simply ask you, tell me where the Torah says we have to give a half shekel every year towards the sacrifices, the answer is, you're not going to find it beferish. The only thing that is beferish in the Torah is the one-time machzis ha-shekel of the adonim. It's called the trumas ha-adonim, the donation of the sacrifice. So that is why in Parsha Shkalim, there's a bit of a disconnect between what we actually read and what we are commemorating. What we're actually reading is not the mitzvah we're commemorating, but it's the closest that we have, and therefore we do it by kind of an association. Okay, so those are two, and I'll go back and go over that. Now, there's a third component, right? So there's the Machzis HaShekel every year. There is the Machzis HaShekel, the one-time offering of Trumas Ha'adonim. Truma just means the donation of the Adonim. But then there's a third component in this mix, and that says that whenever the Jewish people are counted, they are not supposed to be counted by heads directly. They are supposed to be counted indirectly, and that is why the Jewish people were counted in the desert via the computation of the half shkolim. People gave half shkolim, Moshe Rabbeinu and Aaron counted the half shkolim, or counted the shkolim, multiplied by two, and knew how many Jews there were. Now, this is based on an idea, which is hard for us to understand, that when people are counted as individuals and they're singled out, the midas hadin is much stronger, meaning to say that when I am singled out even momentarily, Hashem looks at me as an individual. As an individual, I might have many averos, I might have many flaws. I don't want to be singled out as an individual. I want to be seen as part of Am Yisrael. And therefore, it is considered to be destructive to count a person. Now, there is a custom, and this I don't understand myself, because it doesn't really make sense to me, although maybe I can explain a little bit. So that is why, in the Midbar, we count by Shkolim. Now, you may have seen this when you count if there are people for a minyan, right? So you've seen this. So instead of counting 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, we recite a pasuk. Hoshea es, yeah, you must have seen this. Hoshea es amecha, uvorech es nachalasecha, urei v'nasein ad olam. So if you count it, there are 10 words in that pasuk. So if I have enough people to finish that pasuk, I have a minyan. And the basis of the minhag is, you're not supposed to count people, therefore you say the pasuk. Now I have to admit, it really doesn't make sense to me, because you're still doing a head count. So I'm not sure why there's any benefit in saying the pasuk, but that's based on that idea, that you don't count by head. Now, that third component has nothing to do with the Beis HaMikdash. See, that's why I said, unlike the mitzvah of Machzis HaShekel, and unlike the Trumas HaAdonim, which are connected to the temple service, this is a generic concept that Jewish people should always be counted by indirection. They should not be counted direct. In other words, there's nothing to do with the Beis HaMikdash. That's why it would apply even today. On the other hand, interestingly enough, it doesn't always require a half shekel. Half shekel is just a mechanism to make it indirect. So, for example, in the book of Shmuel, you see an example of this. When Shaul HaMelech is made king, and Shaul's first task is to gather an army to fight the Philistines. So he's counting how many eligible soldiers he has. So the pasuk says, he counted them by pebbles. Meaning, every person who was eligible put a pebble in a jar, and Shaul counted the pebbles, and he knew how many people he had. So, you see, the third mitzvah, do not count people indirectly, therefore in the desert they were counted by half shekel, is really a two birds killed by one stone, meaning to say, the Machzis HaShekel of the Midbar had two functions, or three functions. One Machzis HaShekel went to the Adonim, and one Machzis HaShekel, actually not just one, all of the Machzis HaShekels over the years went to the Korbanos, but the Machzis HaShekel was also a census device in order to be sure that the Jewish people were not counted directly. But in the future, that didn't have to be through Machzis HaShekel. That could be through anything. Now, if you learned your Nach, you know that at the end of the book of Shmuel, which is towards the end of David's reign, David actually committed this Avera. David was very proud of how powerful his kingdom was and how the population had prospered and been successful. And David commissioned his general Yoav, who was also his nephew, but Yoav was David's very faithful general, to, let's count how many people, let's have a census. And the Gemara in Brachos says, Yoav warned David, hey, you can't count people directly. And David, you know, didn't care, I'll explain that. And if you recall, there was a great magefa, there was a great plague. Many Jews died because there was a direct head count. Now the Ramban actually raises the question, I mean, how could David HaMelech make such a halachic mistake? I mean, it's obvious, the Chumash says, don't count people directly. So the Ramban actually has a whole other explanation. The Ramban says that certainly we will assume that David HaMelech counted them through shkalim or through pebbles. He did not count them directly. But even indirect counting is only permitted if there's a legitimate need, like army, and not for gaiva. That's what Ramban is learning. Now, this is very interesting, because this raises an interesting halachic question about responding to a census. You know, in the United States, there's a census every 10 years. And Israel has a census too. I don't know how often they do it. And there is a law. You have to respond to a census, right? And if you don't respond to a census, they come into your house, etc. Now, as you would suspect, many Haredim do not respond to the Israeli census. some of it is, you know, if you don't recognize the state of Israel, why am I going to respond to their census? You know, okay. But putting aside the issue of do I recognize Israel, do I not recognize Israel? Some have argued it is halakhically prohibited to respond to a census because it is forbidden to count the Jewish people. You don't count the Jewish people. In the census, I'm asked how many people are in my house. So let's analyze this. If I learn that the only isser is to count people directly, which is the pashtus of the pasuk, then a census is an absolute indirect count because the government isn't going in and counting heads. The government is tabulating forms. I write down on the form four people. What does the government do? The government adds together, or the computer, probably, the computer just adds together a bunch of numbers. So clearly it's indirect. I would actually say that answering the census is better than not answering. If you don't answer, there may be a direct head count, meaning if you don't answer the census, somebody may come in and start, okay, line up, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So for Kerek, you actually avoid a direct head count. On the other hand, like the Ramban is mechadish lahalacha, that even an indirect counting can be forbidden unless there's a legitimate reason. So then you get into politics. Is there a legitimate reason for a census? Well, the truth is that there actually is, because that determines the size of a city, and that determines how much money it gets. You know, I mean, in the United States, a census is extremely important, although in Israel's government it's not going to be the same importance. That determines congressional representation, because based on the size of an area, you'll have either two representatives or three representatives or something like that, and the Constitution itself mandates that a census be used to determine. In Israel, the nature of the government is that you don't really get elected from a district. All elections are kind of national, right? You don't really get. There's in Israel, which is really the European parliamentary system. We're coming up with an election. you vote for the prime minister, essentially. And depending on the number of votes, different people on the slate. There is no concept that I'm the representative of Beit Shemesh, I'm the representative of Yerushalayim. You're not really connected to your district in that way. But be it as it may, this would be the issue of responding to a census, right? So it turns out we have three different halachas: an annual mitzvah of machzus hashekel, a one-time mitzvah of trumas ha'adonim, and a general prohibition, which started in the desert, of not counting Jews directly, counting them indirectly, which in the desert was effected by the half shekel. But in future generations, it didn't have to be that way. It could be whenever there was a need for a census, it could be done by pebbles, any type of indirect tabulation of forms or the like. I think these are three different halachos that are connected to the machzus hashekel. So now, let's go with another question, and that is, just some basic information, because there's a lot to talk about here. How many times were the Jewish people counted? How many, I think the plural of census is sensi, I believe, or whatever it would be. But how many, well, so censuses we can talk about. How many of them were in the Chumash? Now, the Chumash records two complete sensi of the Jewish people. The first, neither of them are in Shmos. The first is in the beginning of the Sefer Bamidbar. That is why the English name for Bamidbar is Numbers. It's a very good name, actually. In fact, that's the name Chazal gave it, Chumash HaPikudim, the Book of Numbers. That is actually the rabbinic name for the Book of Bamidbar, because the very first thing in the Book of Bamidbar is a census of the Jewish people. Now, when did that census number one take place? So the Chumash tells you when it took place. It took place Rosh Chodesh Iyar of the second year of the Jews leaving Egypt. Now again, you have to know, remember the calendar dating here? In the Chumash, the year always changes in Nisan. So they left Mitzrayim in Nisan, and in between there was Matan Torah, there was the Cheder Egel, there was Yom Kippur, all of those things. They then began building the Mishkan. When was the Mishkan dedicated? The Mishkan was dedicated Rosh Chodesh Nisan, the very beginning of the second year, 1 month after the Mishkan was dedicated, God commanded Moshe and Aaron to count the Jewish people from the age of 20 and up, and that is the census in the beginning of the Book of Bamidbar. Okay, 1 month after the dedication of the Mishkan. The Mishkan is finished. Rashi says that how did he count it? Well, it couldn't have been through the shkalim that were given for the Adonim, because they were melted down already, right? So Rashi says it must have been through the machzus hashekel that was given for the korbanos. Of course, that does create a little bit of a problem, because you now have a 1 month gap, because the census through the half shekel offering was Rosh Chodesh Iyar. But they had to start bringing korbanos from Shkolim already Rosh Chodesh Nisan. So if people didn't start giving the Shkolim until Iyar, when there was a census, how were their korbanos supplied between Rosh Chodesh Nisan and Rosh Chodesh Iyar? You have 1 month shortfall. Okay, but putting that accounting issue aside, that is census number one. Now, who was in that census? This was the generation that actually left Egypt. Anyone that was 20, and the Mefarshim say, actually, it's not based on were you 20 at the time of the census. It's based on were you 20 at the time that you left Mitzrayim. So even people who became 20 in that year, they were not necessarily counted. This is the census of the generation that left Egypt. Now remember, this is before the spies. The spies haven't happened yet, so the generation hasn't died. Now, Yeah.
Any reason why age 20? Why not before that?
Well, the simple explanation of the Torah. The Torah uses the lashon by every census, Yotzei Tzava, those who are going out to the army. Now, literally. So literally, that would mean 20 was the age of draft and the like. But again, it wouldn't seem so much as a matter of spirituality the Torah would be so concerned about draft age and the like. But there is a concept that a person is not fully accountable in the heavenly court until the age of 20. Meaning even though in an earthly court you could be punished from 13, but full spiritual accountability is only when you're 20. So the truth is, only when you're 20 you're really a member of the kahal and ready to assume an equal position in the community. And so that's why 20 has a very, very important chashivas. Okay, so everyone here is 20, right? I think yes. Okay, so you're all members in good standing of the community. Right, so that is census number one. Census number one is the generation that left Mitzrayim. Census number two. Census number two was 40 years later, actually 39 years later. This is the last year that the Jewish people are in the desert. There had been, in the meantime, the sin of the spies and the old generation, except for Yoshua and Caleb, died. And now these are the new generation of people that were born in the desert. And they are counted, but only if they're 20, right? Only if they were 20. And therefore, and this is in Parshas Pinchas, towards the end of the book of Mamidbar. So the first census is the door of Yotzei Mitzrayim. The second census is the new generation that is going to enter the land of Israel. How were they counted? Presumably by the Machzis HaShekel that was given in the 40th year. Right, that's simple enough. They gave it the 40th year. We're not really given the exact date, so we can assume it was before Nisan, and you know, you didn't have the problem that I raised. Now, what's interesting about the two, and that's why the Book of Numbers is called the Book of Numbers, because it is bracketed by two of these census. There is the census at the beginning of the Sefer, which is the generation that left Mitzrayim, and there is the census at the end of the Sefer, which is the generation of those who come to Eretz Israel, right before Moshe Rabbeinu's death. Now, what is interesting, and again, you know, we can talk about this when we get to that part of the Torah, is the total population of the Jewish people in the two places is exactly the same. But the tribal numbers are extremely different. Some tribes grew tremendously, and some tribes lost tremendously. So it's fascinating. You know, it's going to be very, very striking to you. You can just take a chumash, look at Bamidbar, like how many people were in Reuven, how many people were, you know, were Reuven in the first year, and how many people are Reuven in the 40th year, and you can see tremendous changes within tribes. Although amazingly enough, you still wind up with the same 603,000. Of course, another question that people pointed out for the mathematicians in the group is that all population numbers never have any tens. In other words, they're perfect to the hundreds, meaning it might be, let's say, 55,500. You'll never see a number 55,510. There are no tens. You have thousands and hundreds. How does every tribe, no matter what, always have a perfect number? That would lend to the suspicion that perhaps the Torah is doing some rounding off. Okay, then you get a problem. Is the Torah going to be approximate, or is this an exact number? Okay, they're different. The Mepharshim themselves discuss the possibility. I think of Chaim Kineski even says that the Pashat Pshat is, it's not just a modern, you know, Bible critic thing. He says that the Torah might indeed be using approximations, rounding things off to the nearest hundred. Okay, be it as it may. So it turns out that in the Chumash we have two countings of Bnei Israel. One of them is the counting of Yotzei Mitzrayim, and the other is the counting of those who are entering Eretz Israel. But here we have an important chiddush of Rashi. But Rashi gives us a chiddush that there actually was a third census of the Jewish people, which is actually the earliest, that before these two, there was an earlier census of the Jewish people that is not explicitly recorded in the Chumash. And that was a census based on the donation of the Adonim, that after Yom Kippur, when Hashem forgave the Chet HaEgel, and the Jewish people were called upon to build the Mishkan, their population was computed based on the Adonim. They gave half a shekel, so Moshe counted the half shekel and computed it. So it turns out, now that was the Chara, the same generation as the first census. Right, the first census in the Torah is in Eor. This census is in the Tishrei before. So how many months between them? We don't have the exact date, but let's say that the first unrecorded census was between Yom Kippur and Sukkot. So you have the rest of Tishrei, Cheshvan, Kislev, Teves, Shvat, Adar, Nisan, Iyar. So you have 6 months. And Rashi points out that even though we're not given a population figure, because the census is not recorded, but we are given the weight, the number of half shekels, when it's describing the Mishkan, so you could compute it backwards. And you can see, Rashi points out, that the population that was counted in Tishrei is exactly the same size as the population that was counted in Iyar. So Rashi raises a very fascinating question. In other words, 603,000. Now, we don't know. We don't know a tribal breakdown in that first census. But since we are given the total of the half shekels, we know the total population. So Rashi asks a very fascinating question. How could the population be the same between Tishrei and Iyar? If indeed anyone that reaches their 20th birthday now becomes eligible to be counted, anybody that had their birthday between Tishrei and Nisan and Iyar would be added to the second census and would not have been included in the first census. So how could the two censi be the same? In the span of 6 months, didn't anybody have a birthday in those 7 months? Now you might answer, okay, some people had a birthday and some people died. So maybe the nature of things were that the people who became 20 were balanced by people who died. That's a possible answer. But many Rishayim say that there were no natural deaths in the Midbar except those that are recorded in the Chumash as punishments or the like, meaning nobody just died. Meaning there has to be some punishment, some event. Many people died, of course, but only when the Torah records it. If it's not recorded, you can't just assume people died because the Midbar was a miraculous place. So listen to what Rashi says. Rashi says a tremendously interesting answer. Rashi says that the definition of when a person becomes 20 is not on his birthday. Everybody had the same birthday, and that was Rosh Hashanah. On Rosh Hashanah, everybody became 1 year, so it made no difference. You could have been born in Tishrei, and when a year later you become 1 year old, you could have been born in Elul, 11 months later. I believe the Chinese have that system. Communist China, everyone has the same birthday, and the Havdil racehorses have it as well. All racehorses become 1 year older in January. So Rashi says like this: if your birthday is Rosh Hashanah, then halachically you understand between Yom Kippur and Iyar, nobody became a year older because those who became 20 became 20 last Rosh Hashanah, and you wouldn't, and nobody knew would become 20 until next Rosh Hashanah. Now, Rashi is a very big chiddush, and Rashi is very schwer. First of all, it's very schwer because why on earth would you use Tishrei? The whole Torah uses Nisan. And if you use Nisan, Nisan wouldn't work. Nisan would because between the first counting and the second counting, there was a Nisan. So Rashi Badafka had to use Tishrei But the Torah never uses Tishrei. And second of all, it's a little implausible that people would have a uniform birthday for this purpose. That's also a bit unusual. But this is how Rashi understands the answer of how the two countings would be the same.
Didn't you say for the second census it was based on who was 20 from the Exodus of Egypt?
Yeah, that's correct. That is another answer that's given. Rashi himself, I misspoke. That is a terror. That's another answer to this very question. But Rashi himself does not learn that way. Rashi himself seems to learn that you have to be 20 at the time of the census, but based on his definition of when you become a year older, nobody became 20, because between Yom Kippur and Iyar, there was no Rosh Hashanah, so nobody got a new birthday.
So, just in the past few years, we've had a number of large gatherings of religious people, the Atzeres Tefillah, Rav Avadia Zavaya. So how is it mutter to give a number count for those things, even if it's an instant estimation?
Well, I mean, that's actually the answer. Estimations are permitted. I mean, you're not directly counting. And anyway, you know, they count. I don't know how they count exactly. Either they estimate or they count. Maybe people fill out a form or whatever it is. But it's true. One is not supposed to directly count.
Gerim counted in the census?
The Gerim were not counted. Absolutely not. Now, we're not really sure were there real Gerim. Certainly, the Torah tells me there was a huge group of Egyptians called the Arivrav. But the Arivrav were not truly Gerim. They were hagerzan. And they were certainly not counted. And Gerim were not counted either. So the only people that were counted were people who were eligible to get a share in the land of Israel. So we really don't know the total population. Now, people say with women and people below 20, you had 3 million people. But that does not count Gerim. Okay? So this is what Rashi says. Now, we're going to have to save this for tomorrow, for next time. But what we're going to talk about next time is I want to talk about these two aspects of Matzah Sashekel. One is the annual Korbanot, and the other is the one-time Adonim, and what the messages are, because there are distinct messages in what that means. By the way, we actually have records. We actually have records in the time of the Bayashedi, that the Jews from Babel used to send their half shkolim to Eretz Israel. And it was a major, major security risk. I mean, imagine in those conditions trying to get you had to have a convoy from Babel is Iraq, right? Modern Iraq is Babel. So amazing, Iran is a Purim story, and Iraq, and all of this. So we have a tremendous. In fact, it was interesting a few years ago. Netanyahu, I think it's a propaganda thing now, but apparently the Iranian government is trying to show how good Jews have it in Iran. So I see things about shuls and davening and Megillah reading and all sorts of things. You know, actually, it looks very real. I can't believe it's real, but you know, who knows? It looks like, you know, they're really having a very vibrant religious life there. They seem knowledgeable. They, you know, they're able to people are leading davening and this and that. So a few years ago, Netanyahu offered any Iranian Jew that would come to Israel, he offered him $10,000. So they turned it down. They say, you know, there are more connections to Judaism in Iran than there are in Israel. It's a propaganda thing. Yeah.
Why don't we have a chatzi shekel now?
Huh?
Why don't we continue it anymore?
Well, because in many ways the purpose is not here. I mean, the purpose of the half shekel was to finance the service of the Beis HaMikdash. We don't have the korbanos, so it's only a zecher l'mikdash. Because we don't have the korbanos.
You can just keep it from a
debt. Oh, you mean to keep it as a debt? No, because that's not going to work. Because every year you have to have freshly collected money. So if I would give it this year, it wouldn't work for next year. You know, so you wait until the time comes. But I just want to point out that it is recorded in Chazal that there were convoys, massive convoys of armed guards that would take this huge amount of money from Babel to Eretz Israel, because there was a lot of temptation for thieves and robbers and the like. And indeed, the Gemara talks about all the halakhas. What's the halakha if I give my matzah sashekel and it gets stolen on the way before it gets to the Beis HaMikdash? Do I have to replace it, or is that considered the temple's loss? Right, there are different rules about that. Okay? But we'll talk about next time the nafkamina between the annual mitzvah and the one-time mitzvah of the Truma Sada. Okay? See you.